This is a recording of Assessing the Criticisms of Early Age Latter-day Saint Marriages by Craig L. Foster, published in Interpreter, a Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, read by Craig L. Foster. Abstract. Critics of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have accused Joseph Smith and other early Latter-day Saint men of pedophilia because they married teenaged women. Indeed, they have emphatically declared that such marriages were against 19th century societal norms. However, historians and other experts have repeatedly stated that young people married throughout the 19th century, and such marriages have been relatively common throughout all of U.S. history. This article examines some of the accusations of early Latter-day Saint pedophilia and places such marriages within the greater historical and social context, illustrating that such marriages were normal and acceptable for their time and place. Modern critics of the Latter-day Saint Church and even some of its members have expressed discomfort over the prophet Joseph Smith's marrying teenage women, including at least one and probably two as young as 14 years. Criticism can be found in both regular and social media. Many people have unfortunately and ignorantly compared Joseph Smith to FLDS leader Warren Jeffs. Others have specifically called Joseph Smith a pedophile because of his marriages to teenage women. For example, a meme found on Pinterest and other sites has a picture of Joseph Smith with the following, quote, "My wife called me a pedophile. I said, that's a pretty big word for a 14-year-old, end quote. A radio listener responded online to a broadcast about Smith's polygamy, quote, "So the official position of the LDS Church is to blame God Almighty for Joseph Smith's polygamy, polyandry, and pedophilia. The Mormon leadership cannot be serious," end quote. And yet another person commented regarding a Salt Lake Tribune article about post-manifesto plural marriage, quote, "Imagine that you are 37. Now imagine marrying an eighth or ninth grader. If that's anything but repulsive to you, then you're probably a sicko," end quote. As a professional genealogist, I have been disappointed by people such as those above regarding historical marriages to teenage women as a form of pedophilia. While the idea of marrying women so young is foreign, and even repulsive to modern Americans, it was not always so. In the course of my genealogical research, I have seen numerous examples of marriage at an early age. While certainly not dominant, early marriage age was also not uncommon, and was socially acceptable in the past. In other words, people in the past had a different understanding and definition of childhood, adolescence, and appropriate age to marry than what is accepted, even expected, in the present. In 2010, Newell G. Bringhurst and I co-edited The Persistence of Polygamy, Joseph Smith in the Origins of Mormon Polygamy. In that volume, I co-authored with David Keller and Gregory L. Smith, an essay titled "The Age of Joseph Smith's Plural Wives in Social and Demographic Context," in which we argued that early marriage age was not uncommon and was socially acceptable in Joseph Smith's time. Reaction to the essay was mixed. Some people agreed with the findings, while others were critical, accusing the authors of overstating their argument. There was even a counter essay in the same volume by historian Todd M. Compton titled "Early Marriage in the New England and Northeastern States, and in Mormon polygamy, what was the norm? Compton shows that marriage age was much higher in New England and argues that Latter-day Saints were outside of the norm with their early marriages. Compton's findings were certainly not surprising to anyone with a genealogical background and who is aware of historical marriage patterns in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic United States. While Compton focuses on East Coast marriage patterns, he did not adequately explain early marriage patterns that existed on the frontier. Pedogamy, the series. More recently, a writer reignited the controversy about young marriage ages by publishing a series of blog posts on the topic. Without trying to hide apparent bias, he wrote that by, quote, marrying very young girls to much older men, the FLDS Church is doing what the mainstream LDS Church did from the 1840s through at least the 1870s, end quote. Not stopping there, the writer then announced that, quote, the data that he has collected on American marital practices of the mid-1800s, end quote, does not support claims of young girls marrying older men. Quote, child brides marrying significantly older men were very rare everywhere I investigated, except in Utah, end quote. In an unfortunate attempt at neologism, this same writer coined the term pedogamy to refer to, quote, older men marrying young girls, end quote. In an interesting twist, the writer suggests, without any published documentation, that such marriages were, quote, especially noxious to non-Mormons, not necessarily polygamy per se. They clearly transgressed the mores of those days as well, bringing down the ire of the world on Mormonism, end quote. Despite the lack of documentation, one of the people commenting at the end of the essay wrote, quote, I work for a historical society in Massachusetts, but I was born and raised in Utah and have polygamous Utah ancestry. You are so right about the data. This was unusual in the 19th century and even in the 18th century and earlier. Most of what I see is people who marry pretty late, into their mid-20s. I always heard that excuse and thought it was true because you hear about it with figures in various royal families. It just wasn't the case for everyday people, end quote. The editor of the blog claimed that editorial practice prevented documentation or endnotes when several readers requested corroborating data. In response, the editor assured the audience that, quote, the research is solid, end quote, and, quote, I would say wait and read the whole series, end quote, or were told to contact the author for his sources and to write a letter to the editor. The fourth essay dealing with pedogamy, titled Observations and Accusations of Pedogamy, included a rather dramatic photo of a young girl standing next to an older man. The girl's height was about midway between the man's waist and shoulders, demonstrating her young age and petite frame, to which one reader responded, quote, great, terrible story and picture, end quote. Although almost every other picture in the series was identified, particularly pictures of people, this photo was unidentified, suggesting an authorial or editorial oversight. Further research, however, identifies the young girl as 11-year-old Francesca Carboni, who immigrated to New York from Italy and was forced to marry a 27-year-old man who beat and kicked her until she was able to run away. Her plight was tragic, and the husband was arrested and tried for abuse. Neither she nor her husband was a Latter-day Saint. The event occurred in 1891 which is even outside the time frame focused on by the series of blog posts. The man in the photo was an agent of the Brooklyn Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, and the photo is held in the collection of the Brooklyn Public Library. There is a point at which misinformation becomes propaganda and does nothing but feed sensationalism. Without documentation, the entire series becomes less credible. Comparing apples to oranges. In the concluding article of the Pedagogy series, the author compared couples getting married in Utah to couples in Springfield, Hampden County, Massachusetts, and in Branch County, Michigan. As with Compton's findings, anyone with a genealogical background and awareness of historical marriage patterns in the Northeast and the Eastern Seaboard would not be surprised, nor should they be surprised by the findings in Branch County, Michigan, which is located on the Michigan-Indiana border. Michigan, in the east-north-central states, was a part of the historic Northwest Territory, or Old Northwest, and became a state in 1837. By 1857, Michigan had been a state for 20 years, and most of it, particularly in the southeast and south-central part of the state, was no longer considered the frontier. Nevertheless, the statistics from the final Pedagogy essay were quite interesting. According to the author, the average age of the Massachusetts brides was 24.1, while the average age of the Michigan brides was 22.6. As will be discussed later, the general marriage age pattern was for marriage age to decrease the farther west and the more frontier the settings. Once frontier conditions no longer existed, marriage age would slowly increase to be similar to that in the older, more settled areas, particularly the eastern part of the country. Jack Larkin wrote in The Reshaping of Everyday Life, 1790 to 1840, quote, "A trip westward was almost a demographic journey back in time. Family sizes in communities further west mirrored those in much longer settled places a generation or two previously. The women of Sugar Creek, Illinois, for example, were marrying 4 to 5 years younger on the average than those in Sturbridge or Deerfield, Massachusetts," end quote. In Michigan's early settlement phase in the 18-teens and 20s, young women, quote, often said yes to marriage at the age of 14 or 15 if the right young man popped the question, end quote. Comparable demographics appear in other parts of the old historic Northwest Territory. According to one historian, in Ohio of the 1820s, quote, "girls were generally married before they were 17, end quote. Generalizing a narrow time window. In the concluding article, the author also explained that to, quote, "learn how extensive the system of child brides was in Utah, he began collecting data on all marriages performed in Utah in 1857, end quote. In his first article, he explained that he noticed, quote, "a large percentage of Martin Handcart Company young girls married in 1857 at the height of the so-called Reformation that was sweeping Mormon territory with its religious zeal and excesses, and that many of the men they married were much, much older than they were," end quote. The author was correct to mention the zeal of the time period. Latter-day Saint historian Eugene E. Campbell wrote about marriages during the Mormon Reformation. Many saints were urged to live polygamy, and this push resulted in considerable competition for wives. The competition became so intense in some places that men volunteered to go on missions to find new wives. Whether or not men going on missions to find wives was appropriate is a discussion best left for another article. Historian Catherine M. Danes also mentioned the effect of the Latter-day Saint Reformation, or Mormon Reformation as it is commonly known, on Utah marriage rates. Quote, "The large number of women entering plural marriage in the frontier period, particularly in 1856 and 1857, adversely affected the availability of mates for men by creating a scarcity of marriageable women. It also had an impact on the age at which women married. Finding few women at the usual ages for marriage, men sought wives among increasingly younger women, thus intensifying the decline in women's mean age at marriage. The mean marriage age for both monogamous and plural wives declined rapidly and bottomed out during the Mormon Reformation period in 1856 to 57 and its aftermath," end quote. In light of such explanations about the effect of the Mormon Reformation on marriages and marriage age in Utah, one is left to wonder why the author of the Podogamy Essays picked 1857, the peak of religious zeal and excess, particularly since, according to Danes, the mean age for women marrying decreased from a mean of between 18 and 19 in 1850 to lows during the Reformation. Monogamous marriages bottomed out in 1857 at the mean age of 16.49, and for plural wives in 1860 at 16.42. From that time, the mean marriage age of monogamous women steadily increased throughout the rest of the 19th century. The increase of mean marriage age for polygamous wives was not as steady, experiencing a sharp decrease in marriage age in the 1870s. But even at that time, the mean age was 17 plus years. Therefore, focusing on 1857 marriage ages would not fairly represent Utah marriage patterns during the whole of the territorial period. While there certainly were marriages to teens of all ages before and after the Mormon Reformation, the high number of marriages to girls in their early teens during this period was an anomaly. So why then would the author focus on that year? Perhaps the author's conclusion gives readers a hint. He explains that, quote, "Some might want to whitewash or even deny these stories and statistical findings," end quote. He then declares it was time for, quote, "those of us with a Utah Mormon heritage and ancestry to confront this unsavory part of our history and recognize clearly the dangers of theocratic rule, whether blatant or subtle," end quote. Understandably, readers might be concerned about whitewashing past events, and the biases of apologists or detractors may prevent accurate portrayals of what actually occurred. The goal instead should be to seek transparency on this topic, arguably something the Podogamy series does not actively seek to deliver to its audience. Why is this obvious? Because of the volumes of relevant data not discussed. Judging historical incidents without sufficient context invariably results in distortions rather than accurate reconstructions. Transparency helps us in our time to understand previous occurrences through the eyes of the participants. Podogamy and Joseph Smith's Young Brides. The Podogamy author began and ended his series by referring to Joseph Smith's marriages to children. By so doing, he touched on a point of discomfort for some Latter-day Saints who have expressed shock and angst over Joseph Smith's marriages to younger wives. Because some of Joseph Smith's wives were teens, at least one, 14, critics have viewed Joseph Smith's marriages to young teens as pedophilic, which is inaccurate. Pedophilia is defined as the primary or exclusive sexual interest in prepubescent children. That automatically rules out Joseph Smith and the men discussed in the pedogamy essays, for there is no evidence of their being sexually interested in prepubescent children. But what about marriages to teens? Hebephilia is defined as the strong, persistent sexual interest by adults in pubescent children between the ages of 11 and 14. Ephebophilia is defined as the primary sexual interest in later adolescence, which is typically ages 15 to 19. As for Joseph Smith, the majority of women he married were in their 20s, 30s, and older. So it is obvious he was not fixated on teens. Therefore, while it makes for sensationalistic criticism of Joseph Smith to accuse him of pedophilia, the reality is that both science and history demonstrate that his marriages to teenage women were not pedophilic behavior. In addition, the evidence is strong that his marriage to 14-year-old Helen Mar Kimball was never consummated. Changing attitudes and definitions of childhood and marriage. It has been said that the past is a foreign country. Things are done differently there. One example is how our modern understanding of what constitutes childhood has drastically changed from that of previous centuries. In the past 100+ years, Western culture has redefined and extended childhood to the point that even people in their early to mid-20s are viewed as still in a stage of childhood. New definitions and an extension of childhood started to become prevalent near the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th centuries. Previous to that time, children, especially those living in rural settings and frontier conditions, were considered adults by the time they reached puberty and were expected to perform adult labor. These children were, quote, initiated into adulthood at a tender age, end quote, and were entrusted, quote, early with responsibilities that would horrify a modern parent, end quote. As one writer mentions, quote, the ages at which men and women mature and become adults in their own eyes and in the eyes of their elders have varied considerably in the past, reflecting not only legal practices, but also, and more importantly, the effects of custom, parental influence, and the varied social and economic circumstances of a given period, end quote. Nicholas L. Sirrett explains further in his book, American Child Bride, A History of Minors and Marriage in the United States, that, quote, the precise line of when childhood ended and adulthood began, end quote, was not well defined. In fact, quote, for most of American history, there was no distinction between the marriage of two minors or that between one party who was older, sometimes considerably so, and one who was younger, end quote. Furthermore, according to Sirrett, marrying at the age of 14 was not at all uncommon throughout the nation in the middle of the 19th century, end quote. Sirrett explains, quote, it is clear that young people married throughout the 19th century United States, end quote. Indeed, quote, the marriage of legal children, in fact, has been relatively common throughout U.S. history, end quote. There are numerous examples throughout North American history of people marrying at a young age, and in some cases, a very young age. Discussing marriage patterns of young people, one early settler reminisced about growing up in the Willamette Valley on the Oregon frontier and the prevalence of such early marriages. Quote, "It is remarkable at what an age young girls developed into women, and the early marriages are surprising to us of the present day. I know of several brides of 13 years. One neighbor, girl between 12 and 13, eloped with her lover and was married before her parents could intervene. That couple is living yet. Their oldest child is 30 years older than their last one. There was no state law regulating the marriage age, nor license required." End quote. Before the middle of the 19th century, age was not as important in determining marriage readiness because it was believed that marriage could transform a child into an adult and, quote, her marital status trumped her chronological age, end quote. In fact, the term child bride didn't appear in American newspapers until the 1870s and 1880s. But the age of consent and marriage in our nation was still very young. In most states and territories, the minimum marriage age for girls was 12, and for boys, 14, both ages being based on English common law. However, quote, "either could actually marry at age 7, but between the ages of 7 and 12 or 14, depending on female or male, the marriage would be considered imperfect or inchoate, almost like a trial run for real marriage. A girl or boy could opt to leave an inchoate marriage, but only on reaching the age of 12 or 14, and only if the couple had not consummated the marriage," end quote. As incredible as these ages sound, quote, "there is plentiful evidence both from England and the early colonies that children as young as 8, 9, and 10 did marry, and parental consent was not required at these young ages," end quote. In New France and New Spain, the minimum ages for marriage were 11 for girls and 13 for boys. What is surprising is that the age of legal consent to sexual intercourse was even younger than the traditional age of marriage, 12 and 14. As late as 1880, the majority of states had age 10 as the minimum age of consent. Incredibly, Delaware's age of consent for a girl was 7. However, the focus of this discussion is on marriage age. In 1880, the first year the U.S. Census linked marital status, almost 12% of girls aged 15 to 19 were wives. Based on research of historical marriage patterns, it appears that even as early as the 1850s, quote, "the marriage of young people was least common in the industrializing Northeast and most common in the South, Midwest, and West," end quote. In the mid-1850s, 22% of marriages in Massachusetts were by young women under the age of 20. Obviously, most of those young women were in their later teens. At the same time, 42% of young women in Kentucky married before the age of 20. While most would also have been in their later teens, a number would also have been in their younger teens. Quote, "in all societies, men marry later in life than women, and the gender differential in age at first marriage tends to be largest in more traditional societies. The 19th century United States is no exception. The male-female differential in median age at first marriage was quite large in the 19th century," end quote. While discussing community studies, historian Christopher Waldrop writes about how an examination of marriages, quote, "may find very young brides marrying older grooms or the inverse, end quote. Significantly older has been considered an 11-year-old differential and up. While marriages of a significant age differential were not as common as most marriages, still there are examples of such with mixed results of acceptability by the community. Consider these anecdotal examples. 15-year-old Ann Ball married a rich South Carolina plantation owner, Captain Philip Dawes, age 60, in California in 1841. 41-year-old Abel Stearns married 14-year-old Arcadia Bandini. Both the Catholic Church and the California colonial government gave permission to this marriage. The couple was popular, well-respected, and for years was the center of Los Angeles society. In 1769, 58-year-old widower Reverend John Cam approached 15-year-old Betsy Hansford about the importance of marriage. Tradition has it that both used biblical scripture to demonstrate interest in one another and to justify their marriage. Because Reverend Cam had known the Hansford family long enough that he presided over her baptism as a baby, there was some comment on their age difference. Nevertheless, they married later that year, and he eventually served as the 7th president of William and Mary College in Williamsburg, Virginia. 44-year-old F.C. Scott of Mound Valley, Nevada, married his 16-year-old wife, Mary, who had in 1880 a 6-month-old baby. Jose Abeta, age 40, and Maria, age 14, of Conejos Valley, Colorado, is another example. Jose Baca, age 35, and 13-year-old Madalicia of Herfano, Colorado. William Skelton was in his early 30s when he married 14-year-old Vetlin Van in 1879 in Geyser, Montana. Vetlin's own mother, Marie, was 15 when she married 35-year-old Pierre Van in 1862. William Turnage was 21 years older than Elizabeth Silverthorne, a part Native American who had barely turned 13 at the time of their marriage in Lolo Fork, Montana, in 1871. After Elizabeth's death in 1878, he married her younger sister, Annette Anna Silverthorne, in 1880. He was 43 and she was 16. The girl's mother, Elizabeth, was 15 when she married 40-year-old John Samuel Silverthorne. Such marriages, as well as others to young girls, no doubt shock modern sensibilities, but such was not the case at that time, as Nicholas L. Serrett explains, quote, "From the perspective of a man, the precise age of a girl, especially if she were in the fuzzy region between 13 and 17 that we would now call adolescence, might be less important than attractiveness, capability, and willingness. Americans of the 19th century and earlier did not identify particular men as child predators or pedophiles, so sexual desire for a younger girl was not stigmatized as it is now. Modern statutory rape laws were not passed before the 1880s. The age of consent to sex outside of marriage was 10 in most states, and precisely because a man who married a young girl legitimized his relationship with her through matrimony, socially and legally, both his intentions and their relationship would not achieve the notoriety that it might today." End quote. If the culture had frowned on such relationships between older men and young girls, quote, "these men would not have come calling if they thought their attentions unreasonable," end quote. Thus, society, depending on place and time, generally accepted these marriage relationships. Yet another example of the male-female age differential was the 1762 marriage of 73-year-old Arthur Dobbs, 6th governor of the Royal Colony of North Carolina, to 15-year-old Justina Davis. Criticism of this match was not surprising. However, at no point does concern for Justina Davis's age appear. Quote, the problem here was not Davis's youth, but rather Dobbs' age. He was a fool for allowing himself to fall for someone so youthful, but that she might be suitable for marriage at age 15 was certainly not in doubt. End quote. But why were there teen marriages, and why were they prevalent in some parts of the country while barely existent in other parts? That is because of what genealogists and historians refer to as the product of time and place that might encourage earlier marriages. This article will discuss what defined the correct time and place for early marriage age in North America. Reasons for and examples of early marriage. Several factors created the right climate for early age marriages, and numerous social and family historians have discussed these factors. They were economic, demographic, and cultural, and involved at least two, and usually all three factors. Furthermore, locality and timing were very important and usually influenced or were influenced by the above three factors. For example, while conditions encouraged early marriage along the eastern seaboard in the 17th and early part of the 18th centuries, they didn't later. The locality was obviously the same, but the times had changed. Further, while there may still have been some economic benefits, demographics, and culture which made early marriage less conducive, that was not always the case, even in New England. Economic influence. A major economic factor involved the availability of work and land. Quote, North American colonists tend to get married early due to several factors. The first and perhaps most important was simply that they could. End quote. Good, stable employment with relatively high wages and year-round work, quote, helped to encourage younger marriage, end quote, even in parts of the British Isles with such industries as the weaving industry and mining. Economic factors and job opportunities were even better in North America. In colonial New England, for example, there was significant immigration and large population growth because, quote, freedom from indenture, a balanced sex ratio, a healthy climate, and plentiful food encouraged early marriage, a high birth rate, and low mortality, end quote. It has been noted that, quote, at the end of the 18th and beginning of the 19th century, fertility in the United States was much higher than that found in Western Europe, end quote. Economic structure of the region impacted the dynamics of the family. A large part of economic advantage was the availability of inexpensive land. More than one historian has argued that, quote, high frontier fertility was directly related to land abundance, resultant economic opportunity, and early marriage, end quote. And, quote, descendants of English immigrants who had far more land at their disposal jumped quickly into marriage, end quote. One English traveler noted during a journey in 1704 between Boston and New York, quote, they generally marry very young. The males oftener, as I am told, under 20 than above, end quote. Even Benjamin Franklin acknowledged, quote, marriages in America are more general and more generally early than in Europe, end quote. Franklin also noted that more and earlier marriages came in part from cheap and plentiful land that allowed large families in which children were taught, quote, examples of industry, an industrious education, end quote. Cheap and plentiful land was generally located on the unsettled or little settled frontier, and the frontier was constantly in flux as it moved westward with the expanding population. So, in early colonial Massachusetts, Puritan settlers had, quote, earlier marriages and hence larger families than had been typical in England, end quote. For these early Puritans, quote, early marriages were the rule, end quote, because the moral and economic conditions, as well as the political and ecclesiastical system, all worked not only to allow, but put a premium on early marriage. Still, when Massachusetts became an older colony and later a state, cheap unsettled land with the accompanying economic benefits that encouraged marriage at a younger age was no longer available because of the large population. These economic conditions and resultant opportunities of early marriage had moved on with the ever-expanding frontier, leaving behind a population that began to marry at a later age for both men and women. Early marriage and large families were considered an economic advantage on the frontier. Quote, sometimes the pressure to move west or to acquire new land necessitated early marriages. Reasons to marry were accelerated. Reasons not to marry were eliminated, end quote. The frontier, quote, tended to blur the meanings of age and allow for marriage of girls who might be seen as too young for marriage in other situations, end quote. Because of frontier conditions, quote, young girls in the West matured rapidly into women's roles. They were courted at a very young age by much older men and were sometimes married when only a few years into their teens, end quote. Furthermore, quote, women in newer regions started childbearing earlier and continued longer, end quote. Anecdotal evidence confirms this trend for early marriage. One example among many was early Oregon settler Charlotte Matheny, who described how she married John Kirkwood after having met him only a few times. Her brother was to be married the next day, and John Kirkwood, visiting for the wedding, asked her to marry him at the same time. She later recalled, quote, I was nearly 15 years old, and I thought it was high time that I got married, so I consented, end quote. Memoirs suggest that 15 was a typical age for women to marry during the earliest years on the Willamette Valley frontier. One woman recalled that, quote, in those days, the young man began wondering why a girl wasn't married if she was still single when she was 16, end quote. Historian John MacFarriger has argued that marriage for romance was neither accessible to nor a priority for people raised on the frontier. Marriage, quote, was a necessity, and frontier men and women lacked the luxury of searching for romantic love, end quote. Certainly, mutual attraction and companionship were desired, but for most, quote, the financial necessity of a partner in labor superseded their desire for a romantic companion, end quote. Cynthia Culver Prescott has contended that the, quote, chief purpose of early frontier marriages was to combine men's outdoor work with women's domestic labor to overcome chronic labor shortages, end quote. On the frontier, a wife was, quote, an equal partner in everything, end quote, particularly labor. The need for partners in labor, as well as the potential to claim twice the amount of land, as could a single man, quote, encourage teenage girls to marry at even younger ages, end quote, than in other places, even some other frontier regions. Jenny Stevenson Miller, an early Oregon settler, recalled, quote, I had my first offer of marriage when I was 13, and from then till I was 24, I had numerous proposals, end quote. So much pressure to marry as soon as physically possible was placed on single girls and women in the Willamette Valley that marriages took place quickly and, quote, without little or no attention to social compatibility, end quote. Teenage girls who migrated to Oregon with their families, quote, were sometimes pressured to marry significantly older men, and at least a few young women married men whom they hardly knew. For example, one 14-year-old married a man twice her age whom she had known only a week, end quote. Such was the emphasis on marrying quickly and usually young that 13-year-old Elizabeth Keegan wrote back to her home in the East and warned, quote, I want you to let Kate O'Shea see this letter. Tell her that I would not encourage her to come here, for there is no encouragement for females here unless she were married, end quote. Women's rights activist Abigail Scott Duniway, who arrived in Oregon in 1852 and married a year later at age 19, complained about men, quote, 40, 30, or even 25, marrying a child of 14, end quote. Despite the remonstrations of a few naysayers like Duniway, quote, mid-19th century men and women across rural America married at relatively young ages, end quote. In Oregon, it is estimated that, quote, the median age of marriage of female settlers at first marriage in the Willamette Valley was only 17.4 years, far younger than the 1860 national norm of 23 years. This was, however, comparable to the first marriage age of women who settled in Sugar Creek, Illinois, several decades earlier. Sugar Creek, located a few miles east of present-day Springfield, Illinois, was first settled in 1817. Its main growth was in the early 1820s. John MacFarriger's Sugar Creek, Life on the Illinois Prairie, explains that as a result of, quote, both commercial and urban development, the age of marriage for American women increased, and by 1800, much of coastal North American society had fallen in line with the European pattern, end quote, of later marriage and smaller families. On the other hand, Sugar Creek and other backcountry or frontier settlements continued to experience earlier marriage and larger families. As noted earlier, this was certainly the case for the Oregon Territory as well as other parts of the Western frontier. In mid-19th century Colorado, for example, most women married from their mid-teens to their early 20s. While there are a number of anecdotal examples, I will give a personal one. My second great-grandmother, Minerva Ellis, married the prominent Elizabeth, Colorado cattleman, Charles Garland, when she had recently turned 16 and he had barely turned 39. In spite of Minerva's youth and the age disparity between her and Charles Garland, they continued to be among the most respected members of the small community. This marriage reflected the frontier conditions found across the West that allowed for economic opportunities and encouraged marriage at a young age, sometimes with much older and more established men. Frontier conditions waxed and waned depending on the locality and the first to second generation of settlement. More often than not, marriage age began to rise after the first generation and certainly after the second or third. Demographic influence. Another factor that encouraged early marriage was a marriage squeeze in which marriageable women were scarce. A scarcity of marriageable aged women, or men for that matter, could be caused by different factors. For example, in post-Civil War America, some parts of the country experienced a population imbalance in which there were more women than men, and a resulting marriage squeeze. This was particularly true in the South, where so many men had been killed in that Great War. Chances of remarriage, or marriage at all, were, quote, significantly reduced because the pool of marriageable men was so much smaller than normal, end quote. Indeed, quote, far more women remained permanently unmarried in the East than on the frontier, where they continued to marry at young ages and high proportions characteristic of the early colonial period, end quote. Nevertheless, and remarkably, not as many women were forced to remain unmarried as originally feared at the close of the Civil War. In times of extraordinary or catastrophic events, extraordinary actions are taken. Perhaps, quote, fears of spinsterhood spurred women to accept unconventional suitors, men who were younger, much older, of a lower social class, from a distant community, or of a different ethnic group, and thus reduced what would otherwise have been a larger cohort of unmarried women, end quote. In certain periods in history and places, a dearth of marriageable women encouraged a much younger marriage age. An example of such was in mid-1600s Quebec, Canada, where large numbers of men had been sent to trap fur, harvest timber, and perform other economically important work. To make sure the men remained in Quebec, the French government attempted to remedy the lack of women by importing filles du roi, king's daughters. These were mainly poor and orphaned young women who were willing to risk their lives crossing the Atlantic and living in North America in order to better their lives. Almost 800 women traveled to Quebec, and today most French Canadians and many other Canadians and Americans descend from these women. Of the 774 women identified as king's daughters, 76, almost 10%, were between the ages of 12 and 15. Almost 42% were aged 20 and younger. Not as well known as the filles du roi were the filles à marier, marriageable girls, who were recruited to settle in Quebec between 1634 and 1663. Some 262 women traveled to Canada. Of those 262, the age of the woman is of the women is available for 181. About 16.5% were aged 15 and under. Most of these were 13 or 14 years old. Interestingly, the second generation of French settlers in Quebec married as young as, and sometimes even younger, than those in the first generation. This was because there still existed a population imbalance of more men than women. Françoise Boucher married in 1650 at age 14, while her younger sister, Marie Boucher, married at age 12 in 1656 at Château Richer. In 1637, two Couillard sisters married within a week of each other. 12-year-old Louise married a close family friend, Olivier Le Tardif, aged approximately 36, a week after her 11-year-old sister, Marguerite, wed Jean-Nicolet, aged approximately 39. Another 11-year-old girl who married was Anne Cloutier, who married in 1637 to Robert Drouin, aged approximately 37. Marrying that same day was 13-year-old Marie-Magdalene Robin-Guillon to François Bélanger, age about 25. Marie Magdalene was the daughter of Jean Guillon and Mathurine Robin. This marriage is of special interest to me because they are my ancestors. Another 13-year-old ancestor of mine who married in 1648 was Marie Martin, the bride of Jean Cloutier, aged 28. French brides were not only sent to Quebec, they were also sent to America's Gulf Coast. In 1704, 23 women between the ages of 14 and 19 sailed on the ship Le Pelican. These young women were known as casket girls because the wooden boxes holding their dowry they carried were called casquette. They arrived in Mobile, Alabama, married and settled in Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Illinois. There were other efforts to provide women of marriageable age to French settlers and trappers. In 1721, a group of French young women arrived in Biloxi, Mississippi, aboard the ship La Belle. These women, 24 of whom married within a month or so of arrival and eventually had large families, ranged in age between 12 and 30. As would be expected, within a few generations, the age of marriage began to increase and eventually came more to reflect Western European marriage patterns. Eastern Canada experienced a significant upward trend in marriage age in the early to mid-19th century. In mid to late Victorian Ontario, for example, because the ratio of a marriageable age men and women was closer, as well as the lack of land and the high cost of any available land, about 90% of women married between the ages of 18 and 28, while the age range for women was about 3 to 4 years older. This mid to late Victorian marriage pattern resulted in, quote, comparatively late marriage, small age differences between spouses, and significant numbers of unmarried, end quote. Previous to the mid-19th century, however, the early settlement patterns of Anglo-Canadians were similar to those of their French-Canadian neighbors who had first settled in the 17th century. For example, Cornwall, Ontario, located across the St. Lawrence River from upstate New York, was founded in 1784. In the early years of pioneer Cornwall, 6% of brides married younger grooms for their first marriage, compared to 12% in the second half of the 19th century. In early Cornwall, grooms were generally almost 6 years older than brides. Brides in their teens, quote, almost invariably married men considerably older than themselves, end quote. Furthermore, the, quote, older the man grew, the more likely they were to take a younger wife, and the greater the spread in their ages, end quote. Similar to the French-Canadian prêt-au-mariage girls, French girls were also sent to New Orleans and up the Mississippi River to French outposts. Amos Stoddard, who wrote shortly after the Louisiana Purchase, quote, the French are prompted to marry early in life. The climate dictates this practice, end quote. Like the French settlers in 1600s Quebec, the first generation females married at a much younger age. Sister Marie-Madeleine Hachard wrote from New Orleans in 1728, quote, the custom here is to marry girls of 12 to 14 years, end quote. While she might have been exaggerating a little, there was certainly evidence of early marriages. In Natchitoches, located some 250 miles northwest of New Orleans, quote, a fourth of the females to marry prior to 1733, all of whom were French Indian, were known to be 14 or under, and in half of the marriages of the next decade, 1734 to 1743, the bride was not yet 15, end quote. In French Louisiana, in, quote, 90% of all marriages, the male outranked the female by a mean of 11 years. Some far more extreme age gaps appeared, end quote. Three marriages had a 28-year age gap, while one marriage had a 32-year age gap. The author of a book about settlement in St. Louis, Missouri, noted that among the French, quote, marriages between very young brides and older grooms were not uncommon, end quote. The French were not alone in marrying young when women of marriageable age were hard to find. In other places across the United States, with a high male population and low female population, quote, young girls were often courted when they were barely into their teens, end quote. Quote, marriages of 12 and 13-year-old girls were not unheard of in the Chesapeake colonies and were noted during the California Gold Rush, end quote. Early Oregon Territory settlers, experiencing not only abundant land and labor possibilities, but also a significant marriage squeeze, produced numerous young brides. Quote, for many women, it was assumed that they would marry early. Nearly 6 out of every 10 immigrant women were married before their 20th birthday, and by age 25, only 1 in 10 women remained unmarried, end quote. 15-year-old Sally Hester, residing in Oregon in 1850, wrote, quote, "I am invited out so much that I am beginning to feel quite like a young lady. Girls are scarce. I presume that is the reason. Young men are plenty," end quote. And when 12-year-old Molly Sheehan attended her first dance in Virginia City, Montana, she was one of very, quote, "few females in attendance and was therefore sought out by many young men," end quote. Even before the gold rush and the invasion of thousands of gold-seeking 49ers, California apparently lacked marriageable women. Western historian Albert L. Hurtado wrote about California's population, quote, "There were too many men competing for too few women. This basic fact was plain in the operation of the marriage market, where women had many opportunities to marry and men had few," end quote. 13-year-old Virginia Reed of Donner Party fame wrote back to Illinois advising that a girl who wanted to get married should come to California where, quote, "she can get a Spaniard anytime," end quote. Reed received a marriage proposal shortly after being rescued, but turned her suitor down. She married another man 3 years later when she was 16. Another Donner Party member, Mary Murphy, married 3 months after her rescue. She was 13 at the time. At the height of the California gold rush, the, quote, "populace was overwhelmingly young and male," end quote. In 1850, there were 12.2 males per female. While this imbalance had decreased in 1852 to 7.2 and in 1860 to 2.4, there was, nevertheless, an imbalance, and women were scarce to the point that, as a former pioneer immigrant remembered, quote, "it was customary in early days in California for girls to marry at 14, 15, and 16 years of age," end quote. Even more significant, according to Hurtado, the sex ratios for white age cohorts in 1860 had 3.1 males per female for those aged 20 to 29 and 4.3 males per female in the 30 to 39 age cohort. This obviously meant significant competition for marriageable females and naturally would have driven the marriage market toward younger girls. Historian Kenneth L. Holmes observed about California in that period, quote, "men courted young girls barely into their teens, and a girl could get married halfway through her adolescent years," end quote. In the different agricultural communities and even most mining towns of settled regions that had previously exhibited frontier conditions, typically within a generation, the average age at first marriage began to increase, following the course of earlier places such as Massachusetts and localities west of there. Quote, "eventually, as population density increased and the numbers of males and females evened out, the average marriage age of women increased and their fertility declined," end quote. Cultural influences. Culture was another factor in marrying at a young age, as certain ethnic and other groups tended to marry earlier than others. Quote, "Southern women, as a rule, marry very young, younger than their northern counterparts, and much younger than men," end quote. Southerners, in general, married at a younger age than they did in other regions, such as New England. In a pattern from colonial times, some, quote, "planter families had married their children as young as 8 or 9 to each other to solidify family dynasties." This practice had largely been eliminated by the antebellum period, end quote. Teenage marriages, however, did continue. This was particularly the case in the southern backcountry, which included the Piedmont and Appalachian Mountains extending from Virginia down through Georgia. In fact, historians have noted that in particular regions of the southern backcountry, upcountry Georgia, for example, quote, marriage beginning at 14 or 15 was common, end quote. For example, one writer noted that southern backcountry, quote, frontier marriages were early and prolific, end quote. He added, probably with some exaggeration, quote, in one Carolina backcountry district with 17,000 white inhabitants, there was not a woman at age 25 who was neither wife nor widow, end quote. In 1737, John Brickell, in describing his travels through North Carolina, wrote that women there, quote, marry generally very young, some at 13 or 14, and she that continues unmarried until 20 is reckoned a stale maid, which is a very indifferent character in this country, end quote. Thus, both brides and grooms on the southern frontier or backcountry were particularly young. These young back settlers appear to have been following cultural norms, quote, this was partly the result of a frontier environment, but not entirely so. Other frontiers were very different, and it is interesting to observe that of all the regions of England, age at marriage was lowest in the north, as much as 3 years below southern England. Here again, the back settlers followed their ancestral ways, end quote. The north of England was actually specifically the Scottish-English border, or what the Lowland Scots referred to as the borders. A number of these borderers chose or were forced to immigrate to Ulster. Their descendants later immigrated to North America, bringing with them their customs and traditions. These Ulster Scots were known in the Americas as the Scotch-Irish. The custom of the Scotch-Irish, quote, encouraged very early marriage. Common was age 14 for boys and 12 for girls, end quote. These Scotch-Irish drew on the tradition of early marriage and large families replicated elsewhere in the American colonies. One contemporary wrote about the Scotch-Irish of the backcountry, quote, there is not a cabin but has 10 or 12 young children in it. When the boys are 18 and the girls 14, they marry, so that in many cabins you will see 10 or 15 children, end quote. This Scotch-Irish culture spread out from the 18th century Appalachia and influenced the greater American culture, particularly on the ever-expanding frontier. Part of that cultural influence involved early marriage when economic and other conditions were right. This was witnessed repeatedly in American history, from the Atlantic seaboard to the Pacific coast, as descendants of the Scotch-Irish, as well as others, moved westward. Timing and incidents of first marriage. As Nicholas L. Surratt has explained, throughout most of the 19th century, quote, marriage in the middle teen years and sometimes earlier, while by no means the norm, was relatively common, end quote. Plenty of anecdotal evidence demonstrating that early marriage age was accepted by most of society in the 19th century and earlier has been given in this article, but works such as Surratt's American Child Bride and the article, The Effect of the Civil War on Southern Marriage Patterns, have also provided statistical evidence of such. Following are the nuptiality measurements for the white population of the United States, 1850 to 1880, provided in The Effect of the Civil War on Southern Marriage Patterns. While the charts in that article cover male and females ages 15 to 54, only the mean age at marriage and the married males and females ages 15 to 19 will be discussed here. Following this are charts giving these numbers and percentages. Of particular interest, when the statistics are analyzed by census region, they tell a very interesting story about marriage age trends. The regions were analyzed by northern regions and southern regions where the percentage of married 15 to 19-year-olds was greater in the southern regions. Even more significant, both the New England and Mid-Atlantic women were above the U.S. average for mean age and below the average percent of females married. This statistical difference between the East North Central Census region and the West North Central region is fascinating. In the 1850s, East North Central, which included Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, and Wisconsin, the percentage of married women aged 15 to 19 was 12.4. The percentage rose to 12.9 in 1860, but by 1880 had fallen to 9.8. The West North Central region, which included Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota, had a mean marriage age below the national average at 21.4. These statistics demonstrate why using localities in Massachusetts and Michigan as a comparison with Utah, as was done in the pedagogy series, truly is like comparing apples to oranges. The East South Central region, Alabama, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Tennessee, and the West South Central region, Arkansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas, had even lower mean marriage ages and higher percentages of married women in the 15 to 19 cohort. Unfortunately, no statistics were available for the 1850 census in the Mountain and Pacific Census regions, and there was no mean marriage age for females from the 1860 census. However, the percentage of married women between 15 and 19 was 32.4, and in 1870, it was 27.5%. These percentages represented a third in 1860 and well over a quarter in 1870 of married women in the combined Mountain and Pacific regions, a significant number indeed. Moreover, the mean marriage age for women in 1870 was 20.1, almost 5 years younger than women's mean marriage age in New England and almost 4 years younger than women in the Mid-Atlantic and 2 years younger than women in East North Central. Then in comparing percentages of women married to men 15 years and older, there is another chart of the North Census region and the Southern Census region showing the percentage of women who married men 15 years and older. Also of interest to this discussion was the percentage of women married to a man 15 or more years older. The statistics according to the effect of the Civil War on Southern marriage patterns, divided by Northern and Southern census regions as shown above. Obviously, the numbers and percentages were not high for women married to a man 15 years or older. The percentages were higher in the Southern census region. Nevertheless, despite accusations of so-called pedagogy being a Latter-day Saint thing that shocked and offended the rest of the nation, while far from being in the majority, still thousands of couples across the country obviously were in similar relationships that involved a wife much younger than the husband. Early marriage age continues into the 20th century. By the end of the 19th century, most states and territories had changed the laws governing marriage age and age of consent, the majority raising the ages. The social trend toward a higher marriage age started in the industrialized Northeast in the mid-1800s, where, quote, marriage at 15 was indeed increasingly seen as bizarre, end quote. The trend continued into the first decades of the 20th century. After World War II, marriage age dropped significantly. In fact, a higher percentage of girls age 14 married in 1970 than in 1940, albeit both groups were quite low compared to the rest of the population. Nevertheless, in some parts of the country, marrying early was still not only acceptable, but also fairly common. This was especially so in places like the rural South, particularly Appalachia, where one person explained, quote, "Marriage comes early in the mountains," end quote. Quote, "Rural Southerners particularly were much more likely to marry at younger ages than those in other regions of the country," end quote. In fact, in the 1920s and 1930s, it was claimed that, quote, "a girl was a spinster at 18 and on the cull list by 20, end quote. In 1937, the marriage of Eunice Winstead to her neighbor, Charlie Johns, brought unwanted national and even international media attention to youthful marriages in eastern Tennessee. The bride was of the extremely young age of 9, while the groom was 22. While the couple had married without parental permission, both sets of parents accepted the marriage and allowed the newlyweds to set up house. Obviously, this marriage was extraordinary and even shocked the couple's family and neighbors. Still, Eunice's mother had married at age 16, and her older sister was 13 when she married. Moreover, in 1930, only 7 years before this marriage, there were still 4,506 wives, including widows and divorcees, under the age of 15. Thus, while young age marriage trends had changed significantly from the middle of the 19th century, marrying at a young age had not completely disappeared and was a way of life in some parts of the United States. Conclusion. This essay does not attempt to justify past marriages, including plural marriages, among the Latter-day Saints, which involve young brides. A primary concern about the recent discussion of such unions is the apparent lack of context regarding 19th century marriage patterns. As portrayed in the Pedagogy series, the men were seemingly libido-driven pedophiliacs and the women gullible pawns. Furthermore, pedagogy was implied as predominantly practiced by members of the church in Nauvoo and Utah during the 19th century. Such one-dimensional depictions are not really that useful or knowledgeable, even if applauded by a host of online commentators and Facebook posters. A more accurate view of history demonstrates that our modern understanding of what constitutes childhood and proper age of first marriage has drastically changed from earlier times. This then results in a more nuanced view of the topic. What shocks and offends 21st century sensibilities was accepted, sometimes even expected, in the centuries leading up to at least the later decades of the 19th century. As a number of non-Latter-day Saint historians and researchers have demonstrated, early-age marriages were a part of the wider American social fabric in the mid-1850s, the same period ostensibly examined in the Pedagogy series. They have demonstrated that time, place, economics, demographics, and culture all played a role in determining the marriage ages of both females and males. Places where land and work were readily available encouraged early marriage, as did a high male-to-female ratio. The frontier almost always provided the right circumstances for early marriage, and the frontier was constantly in flux. Moreover, Nauvoo of the 1840s, on the edge of the western frontier, exhibited many of the characteristics of frontier society, and Utah was certainly a frontier setting through much of the latter 19th century. It is understandable that marriages in both Nauvoo and Utah would reflect frontier marriage patterns, resemble patterns of other Western and frontier states and territories, and would not reflect marriage trends of most states in the non-frontier eastern portion of the United States. So rather than Joseph Smith's and other Latter-day Saints' marriages to teens being out of the norm or an evidence of pedophilia, these marriages seem to fit comfortably into the culture and setting of that period. Despite the concerns and possible good intentions of those writing about 19th century Latter-day Saint marriages, writers and commentators may find themselves spinning the historical data rather than accurately reporting it when they fail to take the greater historical context into account. This has been a recording of Assessing the Criticisms of Early Age Marriages by Craig L. Foster, published in Interpreter, a Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, Volume 31, 2019, read by Craig L. Foster. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged. The journal and its websites are credited and is for non-commercial use. A printed version of this and many other articles can be found at journal.interpreterfoundation.org. More information about the Interpreter Foundation, along with a wide array of additional resources, can be found at interpreterfoundation.org.